You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
The U.S. Constitution prohibits the state from sentencing people to cruel and unusual punishment. And this was part of the motivation to, over time in the United States, shift away from firing squads, hangings, and the electric chair to the use of lethal injection. But in the case of a convicted rapist and murderer, Dennis McGuire, it was his lethal injection delivered last week in Ohio that has been described as cruel and unusual.
The agony and terror of watching my dad suffocate to death lasted more than 19 minutes. It was the most awful moment in my life to witness my dad's execution. I can't think of any other way to describe it than torture.
That's Dennis McGuire's son speaking there. Now, one can easily imagine that watching one's father die by any manner of execution would be awful, but the effects of the particular chemicals given McGuire induced what seems to have been anything but a peaceful slide into some eternal rest.
His head kept coming up, and his mouth was wide open, and he's making all kinds of horrible noises. And it went on for a while. And I ended up I had to pull my hat over my head because I couldn't see it no more.
That is Amber McGuire, Dennis McGuire's daughter, describing what may have been a slow, chemically induced suffocation. This is something that was predicted in court testimony by anesthesiologist Dr. David Wiesel at Boston Children's Hospital. Dr. Wiesel joins us now. Welcome.
Hello, John.
Now, is chemically induced suffocation too strong of a word for what seems to have happened last Thursday?
Actually, it seems quite reasonable. He received chemicals and he suffocated.
And in the expert testimony that you gave in advance of this execution, your concern was the particular chemicals did not prepare McGuire for what was going to happen to his body that actually killed him. Can you explain that?
Well, sure. So previously, up until now, the first drug in a lethal injection protocol was to anesthetize the inmate. This was a completely different approach, where there's to be some sedation of the inmate by midazolam, which is a drug like Valium, and then the inmate would be killed by a very large dose of a narcotic medication, somewhat like morphine, by basically drifting off and falling asleep. However, in Mr. McGuire's case, he had some characteristics that put him at great risk for not having a smooth drifting off to sleep from the narcotic medication, and thus we have what we have.
How has the political situation over the use of lethal injection drugs sort of shaken up the formula that's used here and made it unpredictable as to what chemicals are actually used? Why would a formula like this even be considered under any circumstances?
So for about 20 years ago, there's been a standard protocol of pentothal, which put the inmate to sleep, pancuronium, which is a muscle relaxant so the inmate wouldn't move, mostly for aesthetics, and potassium chloride to stop the heart. In the late 2000s, amid concerns that inmates were awake, based in part on a California case, the Bays case from Kentucky went to the Supreme Court. Kentucky, in a very fractured decision, I think there were seven opinions, ruled that Kentucky's protocol of pentothal, muscle relaxant, pancuronium, and potassium chloride was acceptable under the Constitution. About that time, the company that made pentothal decided not to make it anymore. That was in part because they moved their manufacturing plant to Italy. And the government in Italy said, if you make drugs used in lethal injection, we will hold your people here responsible. Several states tried to get pentothal in illegally, and that was stopped, and those drugs were taken away. But with pentothal running out, they went to another barbiturate called pentobarbital. And states took different courses. Some kept the drug to put them to sleep, the drug to paralyze them, and the drug to stop the heart. But others, notably Ohio, started a one-drug technique of just giving a large drug of pentobarbital. But now, the company that makes pentobarbital put controls on who could get it and have basically kept the states from not getting it for this purpose. In Ohio, they had a backup plan of intramuscular, midazolam, and hydromorphone, which is how we ended up here.
And it sounds to me as though Dennis McGuire was in a situation where he was faced with this particular cocktail of drugs, not because of any medical reason, but because of a kind of cat-and-mouse political game going on over the issue of capital punishment. Are medical people making the decisions of what chemicals are used here, or is it political decisions that are determining how people die by lethal injection?
The path I just described is clearly political. I know that no anesthesiologist is involved because we are not permitted. There's certainly evidence that in other states, physicians have been involved in designing protocols or in even participating in protocols. But in terms of Ohio, as far as I know, no physician was ever involved in building this protocol.
Talking with Dr. David Wiesel, an anesthesiologist at Boston Children's Hospital. He serves as an expert witness on death penalty drugs. And, you know, throughout your experience as an expert witness, you pride yourself on being emotionally detached, on not having your testimony about the behavior of drugs be influenced by whatever beliefs or, you know, ideas you have about capital punishment. Is that fair?
True.
I'm wondering if this particular case and what happened to Dennis McGuire pushed you out of that in some way. What was your reaction to what happened here?
Initially, I was very, very angry. And then it settled into a deep sadness. And I think why I was more angry this time was this was so obvious. This was clearly going to happen. I told them this was going to happen. This didn't have to happen. And I think that's why I was so angry.
Dr. David Wiesel is an anesthesiologist at Boston Children's Hospital. He serves as an expert witness on death penalty drugs. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're interested in your response to that story or any story you hear on the program. You can always call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. You find us at thetakeaway.org. You can share your comments. And to get an early jump on all of our conversations, join our listener response network by signing up for our texts. You'll get one text a day. We ask you a question featured on the next day's program, so your voice becomes part of our on-air conversation. Just text the word START to 69866. That's START to 69866.
The Takeaway is supported by Lumosity.com, the brain training program designed by neuroscientists and used by 50 million people, created to improve memory and attention. More at Lumosity.com.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.